Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
All right, everyone. On today's episode of Nothing Major, it's Rome Finals weekend. We're going to talk through some of our good results and bad results in Rome. We also have a Rome-themed mailbag. Everyone sent in their questions regarding Rome. We're going to answer some of those. It's going to be awesome. So let's get started. All right, everyone. Welcome back to Nothing Major. I got John Isner, Jack Sox, Steve Johnson, Charlie Fox, the team at SIFT, and myself, Sam Querrey. I want to kick off the show today with the Aura Draw that our tournament director, John Isner, has so graciously put together for us. For those of you that haven't been paying attention, we've got an Aura Draw coming out today. It's players that retired between 1980 and 2010. You have to have retired or played within that era, those 30 years, and this is going to be based on Aura. Draw comes out today. Voting will start on Sunday, so it's a round of 16. First round will vote on Sunday, and then Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, we will crown our champion. So look out for that. It's going to be on our Instagram stories, just like the Hottie Draw was, so you can go on there and vote for the player with the most Aura.
I'm going Borg. I think Borg gets it done.
I'm going with an unseeded Safin to win it.
Ooh, that's a good one.
I'll give two matchups as a little tease. First round matchups. How about this one? Boris Becker versus Gustavo Kuerten. First round matchup. As I said, the draw's loaded. And then I will go with... All right, how about Yannick Noah versus Stefan Edberg? Another first round matchup.
Couple tough rounds there.
Or draw comes out today, so look for it. Voting's going to start Sunday. Roland Garros is a little over a week away. We're thinking of doing what we did for the Australian Open, calling something major every other day, you know, with recaps, results, our thoughts on the French Open. So let us know in the comments. You guys want that? I'm sure everyone does, because it was fun at the Australian Open. We enjoyed it too, but we're still in Rome. So, we want to do a little Rome story time. Let's go around the room here. Everyone's played Rome a dozen times. Let's start with John Isner. Do you have a favorite memory of Rome off the court? Not on the court, but off the court. Is there a Rome memory that comes to mind?
I think, and I'm not trying to butter you up, Sam. I think one of the few times that you and I just went fanny packing together. And we did the whole Rome deal. And without you, we would have gotten crazy lost, because this is before like the phones had like good GPS systems on them and everything. And Sam has an unbelievable sense of direction. So he knew exactly where we were, remembered the landmarks we were at. So I think just touring the city with you, Sam. Remember, we went to the overrated Trevi Fountain. I think we did,
we did
a lot of stuff. We did it more than one time. So it was more like a bit of a tradition, I think, you and I. So I'm going to say that, Sam. I really enjoy those times.
Yeah, a lot of times, you know, you might lose at a tournament, especially in Rome. A lot of times we lost on Sunday. You have like 6 days to kill. And as everyone knows, Rome, there's a lot of stuff to go check out there. I did a handful of tourist days with Stevie. I'm going to go to Stevie. Stevie, is there you have a Rome story or an event off court that you remember?
Yeah, for me, it's kind of the same as John, because we would lose inevitably on Sunday, so we'd have a lot of time off, and it would be fanny packing with Sam Querrey around Rome. And just seeing the shenanigans, or how many gelato stands you can hit in one session, would always be kind of entertaining because there always seemed to be one. But the one moment that sticks out to me the most, whatever year it was, Sam, you know, the selfie sticks were huge. You know, they were just growing in popularity, and Sam was just cruising Rome with his selfie stick, and he's just trying to get selfies with like the horses cruising around Rome in front of everywhere. And it was just classic Sam just being a goofball, just keeping the energy light and fresh. And he kept us all in a good mood after a Sunday loss. So it was, that was always my off-court memories, was just cruising around Sam with Sam or whoever, just trying to, you know, kill time before we went to Geneva or Lyon or Nice, whatever tournament we were going to next.
I got screwed that one year. Remember at dinner afterwards, there was like,
this
it was
a great
selfie
story.
Stick year. And the Stevie, you tell it.
Yeah. So we were all out at dinner. I think John might have been there. You know, we were out with a bunch of people with one of the doctors that Davis Cup doctors forever, Doc Dines. And, you know, the selfie sticks obviously were a thing. We get this guy, you know, with 1,000 selfie sticks trying to sell like whatever on the side of the road. You know, they were a dime a dozen over there. And we go out there and Doc Dines buys one for, let's call it $10. And so he gets one. We're kind of playing around with it. And then Sam comes like running back. He goes, guys, I just bought a selfie stick. I got the best price ever. We're like, oh, what'd you pay? He's like, oh, like $30. And we just start cracking up because we're like, he just bought one from the exact same guy for 10.
Yeah.
So then Sam tries to go back to the guy and haggle to get some of his money back because he overpaid for a selfie stick. And the guy was like, hey, the price is the price. Like, I don't know what to tell you. And like Sam was so flustered by this because he just completely overpaid for a selfie stick. You know, and this is out of character for Sam because he is a very strong negotiator, whether it be on the streets of Rome, in the silk markets of China. You know, he is a strong negotiator, and he got one pulled over him in that transaction.
There he is. I have a picture of the guy that got me.
Yep, that's the guy that got
him. There's
right
the
there.
Guy.
And, you know, with the selfie stick that Sam had just purchased for him. So we had a great laugh.
Everything's a negotiation.
Yep.
On the streets of Rome.
Everything.
Yeah, yeah. No. The guy, touche to that guy. He got me. Jack, did you ever have, you do any tour stays in Rome when you were there?
Probably the only time was with John. We went to the Vatican and we toured that. And I wasn't much of a sightseer really at tournaments. I probably had more nighttime activities that I probably won't tell the story. I had some fun nights in Rome, but I'll probably leave those off of here for the stories. But yeah, I wasn't much of a sightseer, to be honest. Like once, if I wasn't at the courts, I wasn't doing my thing. I didn't really feel like walking around the city and like cities or whatever and doing all that. But yeah, maybe one day I'll go back and check some stuff out.
I'm a little with you. Sometimes like, I don't have like the appreciation for the history and it's like kind of a,
yeah,
can be overrated, like walking around these cities.
I mean, it always just didn't help because in Rome, we would lose on Sunday. So you literally had 7 or 8 days before your next tournament.
Yeah.
So there was nothing else to do. It's not like you were going to go out there and practice 4 hours a day, you know, on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Like that's just the best way to get burnt out before going into your next event. And so we always took a couple of days off. And I remember Sam and I had a couple less than stellar practices. If Sam can remember, out at the Rome tournament, like 4 or 5 in the afternoon, we played mini tennis for an hour and then we'd just leave. Like there would be no real hard work done, you know, on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, but you know, you just needed to kind of take a break or a mental break. But that's the only reason we did a lot of touristy things in Rome was because we didn't want to spend any time on the practice court.
We had one year, our coach Craig Boynton wasn't there. So Stephen Armitage was our fill-in coach for the week. And he, as I don't know if people know, he's married to Ali Risk Armitage. And so she was also playing the Rome tournament. So after Steve and I were out of the event, you know, lost on Sunday, he would go watch her play and just kind of be like, hey, you guys got to go practice by yourself. And we would just play mini tennis for an hour in the afternoon.
We would just make up games. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, right. Like, it was so much fun. It was like one of the most fun weeks of tennis I've ever had.
Yep. I don't remember.
Have you guys been, is everyone's favorite restaurant in Rome, Taverna Trelusa? Is that the name of that place?
Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
Have you guys all been there?
Yeah. The restaurant owner takes care of the tennis players, big tennis fan. And it's sort of a revolving door of players competing in the tournament. But having said that, the food's incredible. The pasta comes out in the actual pan that they make it in. So it's this like massive pan, big pasta, and it's like incredibly good. So I think Taverna Trelusa for sure is definitely my favorite restaurant there.
Yeah, if you're a tennis fan, you go there during the Rome event, you're bound to see 2 to 10 top tennis players there every single night.
Yeah. And you got Federer signed the wall and stuff. Yeah. And
everyone, the wall in there, there's rackets and signatures from like every player in the top 100 over the last decade, or last 2 decades, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, we all know that Sam is a bit of the Larry David of the group. He kind of finds himself into these tricky situations, but would John or Jack go to an Italian restaurant, ask for a, you know, whatever's on the menu, and then ask to change the pasta to something that you would like? Do you know what I mean? Like Sam got like the spaghetti. Wait,
are you
right?
saying I did that?
Yes. You got, yes. You no, were, wait,
what are you talking
Abby was
about?
With us. Abby was with us. You ordered, you know, the spaghetti, whatever it was. And you're like, actually, I don't want those kind of noodles. Like I want like the circular little ones, the penne ones. The guy was like, no, we're not changing the pasta. Like the sauce There's is meant no- for this. Dude, you absolutely
I'm
did
gonna
it.
I'm going to verify this with my wife.
Verify
There's
this
no way I would have done
with your
that.
Wife. Of course you did. The guy was so offended. And it was just, I was like, oh my God, like, please just bring my food out. Like, I have nothing to do with this guy. Like, Sam will do what he wants. But yes, this was a dinner moment that took place in Rome at Taverna Trelusa. And I will never forget it.
He probably asked for the bow tie.
He asked for something like, he's like, no, I don't want the spaghetti. I want the bow tie, you know, or whatever. And the guy was like, this is ridiculous. Like, just eat whatever we bring out for you. Like, this is, you're an American. Do not tell me how to, like, bring out what kind of pasta.
Spaghetti is a little bit overrated. I would rather have like the pennies or like a smaller noodle if I had my choice. I'm just going to say that.
I don't disagree with you, but you don't go to like...
Or like the thicker pasta, like the bucatini is better than the spaghetti.
Exactly.
I'm with you there. I'm with you there.
I'm not saying Stevie's right, but maybe that happened. I don't know.
Definitely happened.
The best run of our group at Rome was John Isner. You made it to the semifinals and you beat some pretty good people there. You beat Ramos Vinolas, Florian Mayer, Stan Wawrinka, Marin Cilic, and lost to Zverev. I don't know if you remember that run you went on. Did you? Was there a moment there? Did you feel like you can win the tournament? Or was Rafa looming on the other side of the semi and you were kind of just like, look, I can maybe make a final?
Man, I forgot I made semifinals there.
Wins over Cilic and Wawrinka.
Yeah, I remember those now. I have zero recollection playing Florian Mayer in Rome. Like zero. But I guess it happened. I know. And now that I think about it, I knew that
you beat him. Also, you beat him 6-6.
You dominated.
Of course. Of course I did. I know. You know what? No, I think losing to Zverev, like Zverev, did he win it that year? I think he,
I don't
anyways,
know.
He was, as we know, he's been so good in these 1,000 level events, and he's been so strong, especially in Madrid and Rome. I know he's definitely won Rome before. I just don't know if it was that year. So I felt like I maxed out what I could achieve. He did win it that year, Charlie just said. So I felt like I maxed out making the semifinals. That was a very good run because I did prefer playing in Madrid over Rome just with the conditions. Yeah, that was a pretty good week. But Sam, you and I are no strangers to a doubles title there.
That's right.
We took a shield there in 2010. Yeah, we did.
Tough final.
Let me go to Jack Sock. Jack, who did John and I beat in the final of the 2010 Rome doubles event?
Wasn't it Andy and Marty and the whole
trick question? They didn't beat him.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys didn't even play the match, I don't think.
We got a default in the finals.
Yeah, but we did in another year lose to the Bryan brothers, and I think we spoke about it on a pod. Sam Querrey like practiced like 4 hours with Fed, like 2 hours before the match, you know, like he went like 8-12 with Fed, and we played at 2 or something. It was kind of we got crushed. We lost like 2-1.
We lost 1-1.
1-1, yeah. We got destroyed.
2-3. It didn't even feel that close, did it?
It did not. It did not.
That's a beat
but
down.
Hey, you can't turn down. I was 20 years old. You can't turn down a hit with Fed, you know?
No.
And
that was the same year we took out Fed and Allegro in the quarterfinals, where Fed got the Elegance Award.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, My favorite award I've ever seen anyone be.
The greatest award ever. They had to pause our entrance into the stadium to give Fed the Elegance Award, which he was unaware of.
Oh, that's so funny.
You guys went back to back finals, defended your points.
Yeah, that's huge.
We did.
Yeah, we did.
How about that? We didn't feel the pressure.
Remember,
Sam?
John, there was a moment where John and I, it was like that 2009, 2010, 11, it was when doubles started playing the 10-point tiebreaker.
Yeah.
And there was a moment where Isner and I were, you know, 15-1 or something crazy like that in 10-point tiebreakers.
we were so good at those things. Yeah.
I remember sometimes, John, we'd be playing doubles. We win the first set and go down a break like 2-1 in the second. And John would look at me and say, you want to just get him in the third set, Buster? Sure.
and we would lose it on purpose, like 6-1, like, you know, give them a false sense of security. And then it was just, we would just bomb away on serve and just kind of stay up that, you know, stay up, you know, be ahead in the scoreboard. And one of these doubles guys would double fault. Next thing you know, we win it like 10-6.
We were one of these doubles.
We were so good at those in those breakers when they first came out with them.
We were money.
All right, let's go to Rome mailbag. These questions, everyone's sending questions, so thanks for people sending them in. You guys sent in short questions too, so I appreciate that. What's up with the wearable technology vest? They look like those like sports bras that men wear. I keep seeing players had. I think Sinner had one. Mensick, Murray's worn them. Let me start with John. One, have you ever tried one of those on? And two, how stupid are those?
You're talking about just the skinny little deal around the chest right?
That one's like a lot of soccer monitor.
Players wear them.
It looks like a sports bra and you wear it. It's, you know, these wearable technologies.
Okay, it's what the social media guy Ashton Hall is wearing when he's like sprinting with the Saratoga water guy.
Yeah, I think so. I can't say I watch his videos.
Right? Is that? Well, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah, sure, yeah. Everyone's seen those videos on Instagram.
Sinner's wearing it. Mensick's wearing it. Murray was like the original tennis guy to wear it.
It kind of started in soccer. Now it's morphing over into the tennis world.
I'm a little unaware. Are they wearing it just in practice?
You can wear it during matches. No, okay. I believe, yeah.
You think players are wearing those? And then, like, what are they doing with all the data?
I think it's just a product of just knowing what they're doing in a match, like what certain movements they're doing, how much are they running? Are they running 2 miles, 3 miles, 4 miles? You know, what's the rate? You know, they can check all these stops and starts and changes directions and stuff with those, that technology on. So I think it's just a useful tool to have while you're playing matches so you can try and replicate what you're doing in your practices. But it's a lot more, I think, beneficial, I think, in other sports, just because tennis is, it's kind of just random, right? Like, you never know if you're gonna have an hour match, a 3 hour match. It's just data. I guess some people want more data. I know Sam would never want more data, so he would never wear one. I never did as well, but we would see other athletes do it all the time. It just never kind of crossed over to our world, but we do see more tennis players doing it. I don't know if it's just a fad, a new age thing, or just they just want more data for whatever specific reason.
So it's obviously like a more advanced version of like a Whoop or whatever, because obviously a lot of people wearing Whoop for a while and like you can see what you're doing on that.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's no surprise that someone like Sinner is wearing that technology. I mean, he's number one in the world. He's a great, right? And so he wants always trying to improve, wants to see, obviously check on his heart rate throughout the match. Maybe it's a situation with wants to see which, you know, the food he eats the night before, which, you know, if that does him better heart rate wise when he plays a match the next day, so then he can maybe just kind of really dial in exactly what he performs best with as far as fuel is concerned. And that, you know, vest wearable technology can determine that.
All right. Next question is from Andy. We don't have last names, just Andy. I'm assuming it's Andy Roddick. I know he's a big fan of our pod. This is the new Pope. Leo is apparently a big tennis fan, an amateur player. Do you think he'll make it to this tournament at all? Let's all give our take. Will we see the new Pope at the Rome event? He's only got a few more days to go check it out, like in the semifinals or finals.
I would say probably not. I think he has some other pressing issues at hand. I feel like the first week as being the new Pope is probably pretty busy. He's probably getting his ducks in a row and kind of getting his whatever he needs to do to get his people ready. So I don't think we're going to see him at the tournament this year,
but
I think we're going to see him at the tournament in years future, but just not this year.
Yeah.
You don't think he's on StubHub trying to get a ticket?
You get the 1.5 billion Catholics ready. Right. Exactly.
He's got to get his people going. You know, he's got to make, you know, it's, I will say it would have been cool to be in Rome, like this year at the tournament to see like the white smoke and stuff. Just, you know, you don't see it too often. And to be there, I think it would be a kind of a cool place to be.
Yeah, for sure. I'm with Stevie. I'm going to say no to this year, but I think eventually during his tenure, he will make it out to the Rome tournament.
Yeah, I think so too. Cool. Jack, yes or no on the Pope making an appearance at the tennis tournament?
Yeah, I don't have a good feel for that. I didn't even know the Pope was like allowed to like leave and go do that stuff. So I'm just going to, just to be different, I'm going to say yes, he'll be there. But I didn't know
he had ever like shackled to his bedroom or something.
He stays in the Pope.
I'm saying like, I don't think I've ever seen like something online where like the Pope's at an event or at something like out in public. I don't know.
That is true. You don't see him. You see him at less events than like presidents and world leaders.
That's a good point.
Yes, I don't. That's all. But.
All right. I'm going to go back to Stevie. This was from Federico Beribe from Argentina. I am the last person to win a clay court title in Europe. What's the reason for going 15 plus years for no American to win clay court titles? Do you have a good answer for that, Stevie?
Good answer would be that we don't play them as a whole. You know, we have a strength in numbers at many other events, and we just don't do it outside of the States. There's a few guys that will, Sebastian Korda, you know, a few of the other guys, maybe lower ranked. I mean, we saw it with Ben Shelton this year. It's just going to be hard for an American to win Monte Carlo, Madrid, Rome, Barcelona, Munich. And that is a time of year that a lot of us took off to then get ready for just the bigger events. So we are not usually playing the smaller 250s or even 500s in Europe as a whole. So that's the reason why we are not winning them. As you know, compared to, you know, some of the other smaller tournaments in the States or outside the States where more players might play. But I think you might have that mantle for a while, Sam, to be the last American man to win a European clay event.
I'm giving that another 12 months before one of our guys wins.
Who do you think is going to be?
Wins one of these things. I don't know, but someone's going to win like Marrakesh or something like that. You know, like.
Just nobody's like playing Marrakesh the same week as Houston.
Taylor Fritz could very well win Geneva.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, maybe last another 12 days.
That 2010 Belgrade title from Sam Querrey still annoys me to this day.
It's not like you served for the match or anything.
Yeah, you should have won that.
6-3, 5-4 serving.
But this stat also may not be true. So we don't fact check our information, by the way, just for all those listening. So somebody probably could have won one before Sam Sam.
Well, fact check. I'm just going based on what this question was. So it's not on us. If this is wrong, this is on Federico from Argentina. You guys can go pile up on him. All right, next one from Quam. I'm going to go to Jack. Watching tennis, seems like the Italian crowd can get pretty rowdy. I don't know if you guys seen it this year, but there's been a few instances with players kind of going back at the crowd. Did you ever have an occurrence in Rome like the crowd was a bit annoying during one of your matches?
I've watched some this week, and it actually does seem like they're a little more they're a little more intense maybe than they love to get into the matches, and they love to support either their players and they love tennis in general, but I never felt like it got like crazy rowdy or aggressive or anything. I mean, they bring the energy, but I also loved playing in front of that. So it never really bothered me or I thought anything of it.
All right. Next question from Carlos Vidal. I'm going to Isner on this. What do you guys think about Carlos Alcaraz warming up so early before his match? I don't know how early he warmed up, but a few hours. But Isner, you were always a guy I felt like that warmed up 3 hours or so before your match. What was your thought prep? Why'd you warm up so far prior to your match? I was someone that warmed up maybe an hour and a half before the match and then a little warm up, but you like to go pretty early, like Alcaraz.
Yeah, I did. I just like give myself a lot of time before I took the court to play an actual match. I tried to eat, you know, a substantial meal about 2 hours before. If I was playing later in the day, right? 2 hours before I played. So my thought was your warm-up's a warm-up. You're going to get your 25, 30 minutes of hitting in, warm up your body, whether that's an hour and a half before the match or 6 hours before the match. Like, you're still going to be good. You need to warm up again, of course, right before you go on the court in the gym. And as long as I did that, like had a good warm-up in the gym before I took the court, it didn't really matter when I had my 30-minute practice before that match. Sometimes in a night match, actually not sometimes, all the time, in a night match, I would just hit one time at 11 or noon, go back to the hotel, chill out. I would not hit again. So I'd warm up at 12. And if I played at 9, the next ball I hit would be the first ball in the match, the 5 minute, match warmup. That was just my style. Some players would hit at 12 and then hit again a little bit, maybe at 7:30 before their match. But I didn't like doing that.
Next one from Aaron Luna. What would be your favorite meal to eat in Rome? Is Italian food good to eat while competing? Let me go to Stevie. Did you like eating Italian food? Like when you're in Rome, was it good for you? Feel like you feel a little heavy in the tummy if you downed a bunch of pasta?
I wasn't a big like pasta guy in general. Like I don't ever eat pasta at home or pretty much anywhere else. I would really only eat it in Rome. And usually I would be out of the tournament, so it didn't matter what I was eating at that point. So most nights I would get, you know, we'd get some wine, we'd get some pasta. So that was great. But I would never eat pasta before a match. I was pretty much, you know, chicken, rice, vegetable, you know, things that are pretty simple to eat that I felt good doing. But outside of that, like I only ate pasta in Rome. I cannot tell you the last time I have made pasta at my house or anywhere else for that matter, like going out to a restaurant. It's just not something that I usually do, but I would definitely do it in Rome. It was very good, but it's just not something that I would, you know, doesn't sit well with me most of the time throughout the year.
Can I add something there?
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, as much as we did our European pet peeve segment last week, I mean, the pasta in Europe, especially Italy, is much different and much better for you than the pasta typically you get in the United States. You don't feel as heavy eating the pasta in Rome
than you do
in the United States. Yeah, I'm with you, Stevie. I wasn't like a massive pasta guy. I'd rather have like a sweet potato or some rice the night before. But in Rome, I would have the pasta because you're there. It's the best pasta in the world. And again, you don't feel as heavy. You can eat lots of it and you feel still pretty light and you feel decent the next day.
Yeah, that is true. And you are – no one's had more sweet potatoes than John Isner, by the way, in the last decade. I feel like you've had
5,000 sweet potatoes. They're very good.
Wimbledon, they always have sweet potatoes player dining.
When you're at these tournaments, you kind of have to eat what they offer. You feel obligated to eat pasta when you're in Rome. But pasta is pretty common food with like all players at all tournaments.
Right? Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. They'll just crush it before they go out there. And I don't know how they do it.
Crush it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm on the
like
talk.
Rafa, you guys know what he would always eat the same thing before his match. It was pasta with shrimp.
I remember vividly one of my first years in Rafa staying at like one of the hotels that was near the zoo. That one that caught on fire that one year. I don't remember the name of it.
I remember that. Yeah.
Down there at breakfast every morning, Rafa would have the giant, like the most giant bowl of like Cocoa Crisps, like this big, and just like down in Cocoa Crisps. And then he went and won the tournament. But you always remember like when you're little, like, oh, you gotta eat great. You gotta eat. And like, I'd look over and Rafa's just eating Cocoa Crisps every morning at the breakfast. And he went on to win the tournament.
Some guys were just built different.
Yes.
John and I would die if we did that.
Yeah. Would feel so bad.
Not Rafa. All right. Let me go to Jack here. This one is from Kimmy. K-E-M-M-Y. Is that Kimmy, guys? Or Kemi?
Kemi?
Kemi yeah. Cohen. Oh, from Norway. Are the clay court shoes and hard court shoes actually different, or is it just better for sellers to double their shoe sales?
They're different.
I want Jack to answer, but like, are they that different?
I mean, you obviously have a better chance. You can wear a hard, if you last resort, you have to wear a hard court shoe on a clay court, you're going to be better off. But just the way the grooves are on the bottom and the way that they're made, obviously it's a flat bottom and the grooves allow you to slide and glide around the court, while still like having control of your footwork and movement. I think wearing a clay court shoe onto a hard court would be not as ideal. I mean, so yeah, if you are going to be spending time on clay courts or, and hard courts in both, then yeah, I would get a pair of each. Just because I do think they're different, helps with your movement. But is it the end of the world if you don't have them? No.
Do you think it's only necessary for the really good player that slides around on the clay?
I mean, it definitely helps that way, but it's also from a OCD standpoint, don't bring your clay court shoes onto a hard court. If you have clay on them, keep them off the hard
good
court.
Point.
It just makes a mess. So just have two separate pairs of shoes for hard court and clay, and then you are good. But don't bring those like clay out to the hard. Then you can see the footprints out there. It's an issue of mine that I just do not like.
I actually think it might be the other way. If you can't move well on the court and you're wearing a hard court shoe and you don't slide very well, I think it'd make it even harder to like be able to slide. You're going to have worse balance and footwork out there if you're.
Could be right.
I think there's a massive difference in clay court shoes for a reason. The bottoms never actually wear out. Just so your actual shoes wore out. You can get holes in them or they just get too dirty. You don't want to wear them anymore. But the bottoms of your shoes will stay the same. And they're easier to get the clay out. If you do have a little clay stuck in the bottom of your shoe, like they come right out with the pop of the racket onto your foot. So I don't think it's a gimmick or a marketing tool for companies to try to sell more shoes. There's a useful reason as to why you need clay court shoes for clay courts. And I think that goes for all players. I think if you're, no matter what level you are, you should have a pair of each for sure.
Strong disagree. Shoe's a shoe.
Okay. How many pairs did you guys go through in the clay season?
Well, like John said, I went through one pair sometimes.
I would just never travel with dirty shoes. I would just wear one pair of shoes in Houston, one pair of shoes in Madrid, one in Rome, one at Geneva, one at the French, and never travel with dirty shoes. That's it. That was my issue or my goal.
One final one. I want everyone to give me an answer on this. This is from Luke from London. Where does a center court in Rome rank in terms of best courts to play on during the year? Let's compare it to other center courts. Is it a, let's go around the room. Start with Stevie. Kind of give us an idea of like how good that Rome center court is compared to other center courts. Don't count the majors. Let's compare it to the other Masters series and 500s around the US or around the world. Sorry.
I would say maybe top 10, but you know, closer to like 8, 9, or 10. Like,
okay,
doesn't do it for me. Yeah, it's just that one feels kind of not stale in a sense compared to Pietrangeli, which is a way better court in my opinion. Just so for me, I don't even think it's the best court in Rome. So it's definitely not in the not. Yeah, I'd say 8, 9, or 10, somewhere around there.
Jack, you agree with Stevie, or are you giving it a higher ranking?
No, are we talking just Master Series or just center courts in general places?
Center courts in general. Center courts in general outside of majors.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm with Stevie. That 10 to, I don't even know. I could name a bunch of better center courts, honestly, off the top of my head. Probably 12 to 15 range maybe even for me.
Ooh.
Is there? I feel like you're one to rank it higher.
No, I agree. I think I'm just going to compare it to the other Master Series because I can't quite remember all the other center courts, but just among the Master Series, I'm going to put it dead last.
Yeah.
In my opinion. Although the clay always felt a little different on that court to me.
Yeah.
Than even the outside courts for whatever reason. It was like, it wasn't as fine. I didn't feel like you could slide as easily.
The court itself is kind of small.
But it does create a great atmosphere. Yeah, but when the stadium's full because they're right on top of you, it could get really loud, and it's a lot of fun to play in. But the playing surface, I didn't really love, but
it was a bit thick.
Something about it. Exactly. Yeah.
I'm kind of more like on Jack's side. Like, I feel like I could think of 12 to 15 other courts during the year that are cooler than that center court. So
it's the second best stadium at the tournament, so it can't be that high.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. That's it for our Friday show of Nothing Major. Always love those fan mailbag questions. If you guys want to submit questions, go to nothingmajorshow.com. You can all also follow us on X, TikTok, Instagram at Nothing Major Show. And we'll see you guys next week.